conversation with queer identified writers about their works and lives. Welcome to Queer Words. This is Wayne Goodman, and on this episode, I have the delightful pleasure of conversing with Gar McVeigh Russell. Hello, Gar.
Hello, Wayne.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, I moved to Oakland in 1989. I was born in Los Angeles in 1965, so you can do the math. I have an interesting background because I have a fascinating family.
Okay, maybe we can talk about that a little later. Yeah. This is Queer Words. I always ask, what qualifies you as queer?
Oh, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool homosexual gay man. I've known for a very long time.
Okay, well, when did you first accept that you were queer?
I came out when I was 23, something like that. I was in college. Yes, I was 23 at UCLA. But I was first noticing boys when I was like 6 or 7.
And who are some of your queer hero figures?
Oh, goodness. Going back early, let's say I could intuit a connection between myself and other people before I knew what gay was. So people that fell into that category would be Charles Nelson Reilly, Paul Lynn, even though he's a bit of a mess, people like that. But I would say queer heroes would include Marlon Riggs, Essex Hemphill, Vita Russo, come on, Gar, Angela Davis.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, who are some of your literary influences?
Oh, well, it was almost like a how-to book for my life, and that's Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, which the whole idea of other people seeing you the way they envision you was the best education I think I could have gotten. I read that book when I was about 18 or so, and just before going to college. The whole thing, particularly that plot point about the communists and how he got involved with communists. And I experienced something like that when I was at school. And since not that I became a communist or was interested in communism ideology, but people were trying to figure out, what is Gar? Is he a Trotsky or is he a Leninist? Or and it was like, no. But it was, again, this idea of people looking at you through their own lenses and projecting themselves onto you. As far as literature goes, it was so well-developed a story that it's always stayed with me.
Well, the ideal of Marxism and Leninism is that we are all equal, no matter what we look like or whom we sleep with. However, in practice...
Some people are more equal than others.
Yes. Oh, yes. George Orwell.
Yes.
Animal Farm.
Yes.
Yes, right. What inspired you to begin writing?
That's an interesting question because I have this thing, I want to tell stories, and I've wanted to tell stories since I was a little kid. And of course, when I was a little kid, I thought I wanted to be an astronomer, but I had this thing in the background where I wanted to tell stories, and I wanted to write articles, so I got involved with the newspaper in high school. When I went to UCLA, I started writing op-eds for the Daily Bruin, then later feature pieces for NOMO, the black newspaper, and 10%, the late 10%, the queer newspaper.
If you had followed your dream and gone into astronomy, you could have been Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yes, exactly. So it makes me very happy when I see black astronomers. That's the person I probably could have become.
Well, personally, I think he transcends his culture. He's just such a force to be reckoned with in terms of bringing science to people in a way that's approachable and understandable. And I was thinking, he tells stories.
Yes.
He's taken over Cosmos.
Yeah.
After Carl Sagan, and has continued the model of explaining complicated, difficult topics of science to people.
Yes.
And in a humorous way with storytelling. And that could have been
you. It totally could have been me because actually one of my early really good writing instructors at UCLA mentored me and said, perhaps you might want to do science writing and stuff like that. I was like, yeah, that's a really good idea. I like that idea. Although, in the end, see, this was when I was still in the closet. So once I came out of the closet, then it was like, no, I have to write about this stuff. But I still have a great love of science and science fiction.
Well, many authors, once they get established doing what they think they must do, turn to what they like to do.
Yes.
So that perhaps there is a future for you in writing about science.
Absolutely. That's entirely possible.
Can you tell us how queerness impacts your writing?
It's always present. I always say, when I came out, it was like being able to gain 3D vision for the first time. You're seeing things as they really are. So I can't imagine not writing, first off, writing from a queer perspective. I can't imagine not writing about queer lives because, in my opinion, they simply haven't been written enough. The coming out story, which I know some people consider terribly hackneyed, to me, hasn't been explored enough because there are lots of different coming out stories.
And you have crafted one in your book, Sin Against the Race.
Yes.
An extremely elaborate and complex coming out story.
Yes. Probably because I have a rather annoyingly complex head sometimes.
But it's not your simple, hey mom, hey dad, guess what? Oh, right. We love you.
Yes.
No, it's far from that.
Yes. Yeah. Because that was my coming out. Coming out was, hey, mom, dad, and everything was roses and sunshine. For my character, Alfonso, not so much, because he had the pressure of coming from a family that's very politically powerful and has a long tradition of being politically powerful, going back to his esteemed grandfather. So that type of pressure. I wanted to look at queerness in traditional Black power settings was the idea behind Sin Against the Race. You have the Black church. You had early Black political institutions. His grandfather was a mentee of W.E. Du Bois, that type of thing. Other characters in the book, Sammy, the den mother of the book, and the one that Alfonso kind of gravitates towards. Sammy went to the March on Washington when he was a teenager, you know, that type of thing.
The 1963.
The 63 March, yeah. Yes. So queers in history, to me, is a very important thing because, which is something you do in your writing.
Yes, thank you.
It's important to talk about that.
Well, how about your personal approach to writing? Do you have a pattern that you follow?
Sin Against the Race was many, many, many years in the making because it took me a bit to figure out what exactly I wanted to do and to give myself permission to do what I wanted to do. I am sort of a cross between being highly organized and coming up with outlines and then flying by the seat of my pants. So on the one hand, I am working on a new book, which I might get to a bit.
We'll talk about that a bit later.
Yeah, but in that case, and even in the case of Sin Against the Race, once I finally realized where I was going with it, I did start writing outlines to focus my thoughts. I used the Scrivener software, which is a wonderful writing tool. One of the things I like about it the most is that you can put up a storyboard and have virtual index cards, which you can move around on your screen. So if you're really, really stuck, which definitely happened with Sin Against the Race in the early stages, particularly the beginning of the book, I put everything on index cards and shuffling them around, and then I can figure out where I'm going. And once you start writing, then yeah, just go with where you think it's going to go. Even if it's not on script, just go with it and see what happens.
So you're a plotter who then writes by pantsing.
Yes.
Sort of. Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Great. Can you tell us a bit about your body of work, things you've written over the years?
Sure. Let's see. So the first thing I had published, actually, ironically, was an excerpt from Sin Against the Race, and that was in the Sojourner Black Gay Voices in the Age of AIDS. It's a scene that's actually still in the book. Before that, as I say, I wrote various commentaries and feature pieces for 10% and for NOMO, for which I won an award. I think I won an award mostly for my writing in 10%. It was called the Arvely Award, named after Arvely Ward, who was the media advisor for the campus newspapers at the time. So that was cool. I got a little certificate and a biography of Langston Hughes.
And which campus was this?
This is at UCLA. For the past 9 years, I guess, maybe, I've been writing a blog called The Gar Spot. Fiction and Muses from a Black Gay Writer with Delusions Above His Station, which describes what the blog is. It could be about anything. I was just reminded of a piece I wrote about climate change a few years ago. I do fuss about the political situation an awful lot.
Well, I have a question about blog readership. Have you found it diminishing over the last year or so?
I honestly don't know. I think my blog readers have diminished a bit. It might be starting to tick up a bit more because I'm connected with a lot more writers on Facebook now. But my personal blog probably readers diminished because I wasn't writing as often as I had been. Okay. I had been writing up to 2 and 3 times a week. Because now I'm lucky to do that a month.
Well, I've noticed that more people talk about podcasts now than blogs. And I thought maybe you've experienced the same thing with people moving away from blogs and onto podcasts. So that's why I wanted to ask you about that. Where can people find your book?
It is available in bookstores. It's available on Amazon. And I do have links on my website.
Which is?
TheGarSpot, all one word, .com.
Could you give us a sample of your writing?
I'd be happy to.
That'd be great.
So let's go here towards the middle beginning of the book. This is Alfonso, Bill, and Roy going out dancing for a night of dancing. Alfonso's our main character, and his best friends are Bill and Roy, who we met on campus. And they're going out to Boys Town, which is a traditional white gay neighborhood.
In Chicago. Oh, this is a non-specified
city. It's a non-specified city, that's right.
Okay, I always had imagined this happening in Chicago.
Which is fun. Yes. Benjamin Street, Boys Town. They came as themselves, no fronts or pretenses, twirling, strutting, voguing down the street, at home with each other in the space they created, blissfully ignoring side-eye cast in the gray distance, forgetting that with them always traveled history. Need for a caffeine infusion spun them into a cafe where they ordered chai lattes. Roy got his dirty, claiming he needed the espresso boost to keep up with Alfonso. The dancer-in-chief responded with some fancy foot-tapping and jazz hands. Then he made a declaration to learn every damned move of every damned dance in the badass Uptown Funk mashup video. Oh my God, that video's effing dope, Bill said. He took out a cell and pulled it up. Huddled together, they marveled at Eleanor Powell's shuffles, Fred Astaire's slides, Ginger Rogers' twirls, Bill Robinson's jigs, and the Nicholas Brothers' acrobatics. All their feet jived under the table. Their spark of color went unnoticed by two guys in a couple of tables over whose thin lips dully munched salads as they spoke in nasally monotone voices that carried throughout the largely empty joint. Only their hair color distinguished them. A mutual friend went ethnic, Brunette reported. Ethnic? You mean Carver Street? Sandy asked. Oh no, not there, Brunette assured him. So what's he doing? Sandy asked. Asians, Latins, that's what he's into now, Brunette replied. Jaded eyes rolled whatevers. And I should mention that Carver Street is the black gay neighborhood where the story largely takes place, so that's where my boys are from. Roy flung his arms grandly around Bill's chair and spoke with full stage projection. Did I tell you all about this number I did in the alley behind ye old leather shop? Child, that white boy just could not get enough of my fat nigga dick. He spread his legs wide open in the direction of the salad munchers and pointed to his masked member with both middle fingers. Alfonso and Bill lost it. Brunette and Sandy finished eating suddenly and hastily departed. Roy received the Miss Ashley Award for bitchiness from his companions. Spirits rekindled, they funked it down the street, eventually arriving at the Fable Club, where they segued into a long line. Chatter, giggles, primping and preening, a cue-colored queer. It moved quickly. At the entrance stood a blonde doorman wearing a name tag that read Charles. Sharp-dressed Roy approached first. Charles glanced over his ID, took his money, and let him pass. As Alfonso and Bill fished for their wallets, Charles eyed them cautiously, scanning everything from their knitted ski caps to their oversized coats to their gleaming white sneakers. You know it's gay night tonight, Charles said. Yeah, I know, Alfonso said. Charles stared at Alfonso's ID, then asked for a second one. Why? Is there something wrong? Roy asked. He asked me for another ID. What's the story? Bill asked. We're getting the blues from Missy Charlie, Roy said. He won't let you guys in, and me too, I guess, even though I paid already. You can go in, Charles said curtly. Roy's face grew taut with anger. Without my friends? The doorman ignored Roy, continued admitting others, scanning their IDs as cursorily as he had prior to the posse's arrival. No one spoke up for the three young black men standing aside. Alfonso so wanted to make a scene, to show Missy Charlie some old-school snap diva attitude, to trash the club online. But for his and Bill's precarious relationship with the closet, he would have. Instead, he could only watch the world ignore their existence. Roy had no relationship with the closet. You know something, Miss Charlie? I ain't your fucking little African-American who's light enough to pass. You treat us all the same. You ain't asking no one else for no two ID cards. Charles got agitated, called for security. After a brief conference with the harried doorman, two security guards with long black flashlights stopped and frisked the posse in full view of everyone. It took forever. Humiliation, like earthquakes, caused each second to last an eternity. After finally entering, they plopped into chairs and stayed there, feet and hands motionless. In elementary school, Roy said, some fucker started hitting me and saying, you are African-American like Obama. I kicked his ass. The school wanted to expel me. My mom told him she was proud of me. Carlton showed me some old personal ads from back in the day, Alfonso said. No fats, femmes, or blacks, disease-free, Bill smirked. I showed him Grindr. He said, Jim Crow still wears pink. Alfonso stood up. Sisters, I came here to take my mind off the bullshit I have to face this weekend, and I'm not going to let a bunch of racist pricks stop me. I'm going out there to show them what Carlton taught me. Who's down? Bill and Roy rose. They discarded their bulky outerwear at coat check, though Roy kept his pork pie hat and leather vest. On the edge of the main dance floor, Alfonso began moonwalking backwards in an oval. Folks cleared out of his way. Then he started locking. Bill joined him, then Roy. Some looked upon them warily, while others studied and copied their dope moves.
Gar, what is your involvement in the queer communities?
It's evolved and changed over the decades. First off, when I came out, one of my coming out vehicles, besides writing for 10%, was to get involved with ACT UP. And I was involved with ACT UP LA for about a year and a half until I moved to the Bay Area. And then I got involved with ACT UP San Francisco, realizing that there was a lot of need for better AIDS awareness and that type of stuff here in the East Bay. Me and a bunch of friends banded together in my old apartment near Piedmont MacArthur, and we started ACT UP East Bay. So that was, goodness gracious, 29 years ago.
Wow.
I should note that one of the co-founders and really the den mother of the group, who shepherded along way longer than even what I was involved, just passed away at the beginning of the month. His name is John Iverson.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. How do you use social media to promote your work?
Oh, I send out the usual parade of tweets and Facebook posts. Obviously, anytime I publish something new on the blog, I spread it out like that. I publicize my readings when they come up and keep in touch with people and that type of thing. I don't know if I'm any good at it, but I try.
I don't know that anyone is good at it. What do you like to read?
I am becoming a very voracious reader after living a Vip Van Winkle experience and nitpicking for a while and just reading pretty much everything. And I'm in a book club, which has been really cool. Right now we're reading Isherwood, Christopher and His Kind, and something else, I think, which I can't think of right now, but I'm enjoying it very much.
This is specifically a gay,
yes,
queer, whatever.
Yeah, it's called book. The Boys Book Club, and it's a group of friends where I think there are 8 of us, and we're all gay men. So it's kind of cool. Not every book is necessarily gay-related. Like we read Colson Whitehead's The Underground Railroad, which is a wonderful book, and stuff like that. So it's been healthy.
Well, can you tell us a bit about your current project?
Well, I am writing another book, sort of like Sin Against the Race. It has a long pedigree. In other words, I had started working on it quite some time ago, but I put it down, and now I'm coming back to it. It's going to be rather different than it is before, and I have it very well plotted out. And I'll describe it as sort of a gay runaway story. It's about two kids who leave very bad situations.
What age are these kids?
They're probably about 16 or so.
Okay.
16, 17, not quite legal age. And they leave a bad situation in hopes of finding a better one, of all places, in the middle of the country. I'll let you stew on that for a bit.
Well, I imagine you mean the flat states.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll say what the title is, Oh Happy Day.
I've heard that before.
Yes.
Do you have any words of wisdom to pass along to other queer writers?
Write your passion, which is advice I give to anybody, and write your truth, regardless of whether people get it or not, because readers are a lot smarter than, say, agents or editors, even. And if you write with a clear voice, people will get you, because there's a community out there that needs the words that you're writing, and they will find you.
Great.
I'm really flattered to be here. This is lovely.
Well, okay then. Thank you, Gar McVey Russell.
Thank you.